and welcome to the Chat TCG podcast. I am Paula Savaga, financial advisor on the TCG and Associates team at UBS Financial Services in Columbia, South Carolina. I can be reached at 803-873-9850. Our guest today is Aaron Rowe, Chief Executive Officer at Harvest Hope Food Bank in Columbia. She is not affiliated with UBS Financial Services, and her views are her own. Good afternoon, Aaron. Thanks for being with us on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Paula.
Yeah. We've got Aaron Rowe here today with us, CEO of Harvest Hope Food Bank here in the Midlands. So we're so excited to hear about your journey and what the food bank is doing for our community. Before you were leading Harvest Hope, what experiences did you have that shaped your understanding of hunger and the needs in the community?
That's a great question. When I think about my journey, nothing's ever in a straight line. And so I think back to even going to the University of South Carolina, I've always loved cooking and food and hospitality. You know, I started working at the Olive Garden when I was 17 years old, and it's just been part of who I am, is feeding people. And so I went and got a degree in hotel and restaurant tourism, traveled around the country working in various food and beverage industries, hotels, country clubs. I then started my own business with a cooking school for kids and did that for about five-ish years. That was a really great experience where I really learned to work with community partners. We did a lot of work with grants and Title I schools on nutrition education. And then I ended up working at Bank of America. And through that journey, got to be exposed to a lot of the nonprofits in the community. Also, Harvest Hope, I've known about them my whole life growing up here in Columbia, but I was able to really be involved by getting on the board in 2015. And it opened my eyes to what food insecurity is in South Carolina and really the need that's there and the great work that Harvest Hope does. So I was able to combine my passion for feeding people. And so I think all the experiences added up helped to get there. It wasn't just any one particular one.
Right. That's great. Can you think back to if there was a moment, and you kind of spoke to this, a moment or experience that made you realize that was where your heart was and that was the type of work that you wanted to be doing every day, since you did have so many various roles in the past, you know, with food and with people. So what kind of put it all together for you?
I think when you look at the infrastructure of Harvest Hope, a lot of people here in the Midlands know what our emergency food pantry is, and they see the car line out in front of our Shop Road business. But the reality is we are a logistics company that services 20 counties. We distributed over 30 million pounds of food last year through our partner agencies. So there's a lot of infrastructure that goes into creating the business of Harvest Hope. And when I started on the board, I was able to see a lot of bottlenecks and pain points that when I was with our corporate partners through Bank of America, I could see their infrastructure in place. And I knew there was better ways to do this. And I knew we could feed people better and become more efficient, because the reality is we work with a lot of great funding partners across our state. And I feel very fiduciary responsible to them. If they're giving us their money, they're trusting us, then right, we need to do food banking as most efficiently, as best as possible, to make their dollars go farther because we can feed more people. So it really was just the culmination of seeing a lot of for-profit companies and how they set up their structure in communication channels and expectations, and then able to put that into a company and business. Although it's a nonprofit, that's a tax status, it is a business, to really expand how we can address food insecurity in South Carolina.
Wow, that's incredible. And yeah, seeing the line out there, that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, though, for you. There's so many other things, and I've had the chance to volunteer a few times, and it's always just eye-opening how much is going on behind the scenes. So, wow, it is incredible. So speaking of behind the scenes, what does a typical day look like for you as the CEO of a major food bank?
I think the first statement is there is no typical day. So right, if you think through the day in the life of, a lot of it is problem solving. You know, there's different problems that arise there is risk mitigation, there's strategy. You know, if we think through things outside of our control and infrastructure and politics and funding partners all affect our ability to do work that we have no control over. So a lot of the day is understanding the environment, the economy that we're in, and then being able to strategize because we have to be here 40 years from now. And so it's making short-term decisions and long-term plans and then being able to adjust on a dime. For instance, we had $1.2 million worth of food canceled 3 months ago from the USDA cut. So now we have to pivot and figure out, how do we make up that? And so a lot of it is just strategy and risk mitigation. I think the heart of everything we do and all my staff is the neighbors that we feed. And so every decision we make needs to be centered around them.
That's incredible. For those unfamiliar, maybe not in our area, can you just share kind of big picture what Harvest Hope is and then really the type of people in the community that you're serving and which areas?
I would love to do that. So we are the largest food bank in South Carolina. We cover a 20-county footprint from Greenville all the way down to the PD I-95 corridor. We have three distribution warehouses, one in Greenville, one right here in the Midlands, and then we have one in Florence as well. We partner with about 350 partner agencies. So if you think through food insecurity in our rural areas, if people are dealing with a struggle to get food on their table, there's a lot of other factors that are probably in their lives, including transportation and time,
right,
having to get off work. And so we partner with agencies that are boots on the ground in those communities. We do the heavy lifting for them. So our agencies don't have to have forklifts and tractor trailers right. And these massive warehouses. You know, right here in Columbia, a lot of our agencies are the Oliver Gospel Mission, the schools in our area that we service, the senior homes that we give out our senior boxes to. So we really want to create capacity for those partner agencies so all they have to worry about is feeding our neighbors.
That's awesome. Yeah. And like you, I have lots of good memories of working at the bank through the years and really seeing how giving back, you know, changes lives and It's more than just, you know, us. There's a bigger purpose. So I know it's so fulfilling. So I've enjoyed my time I've spent out there learning what you do there. Since you've been there at Harvest Hope, so since 2021, right?
Yes.
How has the mission of Harvest Hope changed under your leadership?
I don't know if the mission actually has changed, because if you think about what our mission is in our vision, it's to end hunger in South Carolina. That's our North Star. I do believe over the past 4.5 years, we've changed how we do that. So the first couple of years, we did a lot of work on our infrastructure. We've created more automation. We've included technology so that we are efficient. We've grown our retail division so we can go work with our retail stores better to get more food in. So we really have shifted how we approach the business of food insecurity to make sure that our standard is excellence. And that's our mantra. That's what I talk about to my staff every meeting we have. Our standard has to be excellent, because if we don't do that, somebody's not going to eat.
Right. What's one program or initiative that you're really proud of right now?
So my new favorite, I love them all, but right here in the Midlands, we've had a great partnership. We just started with Transitions Homeless Shelter. We've been looking for a production kitchen for several years because that's going to open up how we can feed our neighbors through hot prepared meals. And I worked with Craig back in the winter around November, December, because their partnership with Salvation Army was coming to an end. And I said, I think this is going to be a great fit because I really want this kitchen. I have the staff and support to be able to run it. They are amazing at interacting with our homeless population. Food's not their expertise. We can do food well. So I've really enjoyed that partnership. We're still getting our feet on the ground, getting our structure in place, but we're really looking to grow that production kitchen into multiple areas where we can address food insecurity through hot meals as well.
Wow. So like when I've gone and served dinner there, will it be your staff in there preparing and serving?
So if you go there now, you'll see all of our Harvest Hope. They have a Harvest Hope aprons and our staff. So that is my chef, Robbie. She's amazing. She came from Embassy Suites.
Wow.
She has an amazing passion for feeding people. And it's like walking into your mom's kitchen. So it's just created this really warm environment. The staff and the patrons of Transitions have enjoyed it. And we really wanted to elevate the experience to dignify homeless feeding.
Right.
Because there's no reason it can't taste good. And right. so we do a lot of catering events out of that because the reality is it's the same food. And everybody's so surprised, you know, you cook this at a homeless shelter. It's like, but it still tastes good. You know, just because of where we're at doesn't mean the quality of food has to be down.
Right.
And just because they're struggling with homelessness at this moment in time doesn't mean they can't have a great meal that tastes good.
Right. They're still people. They're still humans. They're still and they humans. Deserve
yes.
to feel dignified and that they're eating something they can be proud of. Yep. That's so cool. I love to hear that. So you spoke a little bit about the rural areas in South Carolina. How would you describe the overall state of food insecurity in our state in particular in South Carolina?
So in the South Carolina area, we do have a high rate of food insecurity compared to nationally. A lot of the drivers that create that high number are the same drivers that you see in rural areas. It's barriers to access. So you have higher amounts of food deserts. You know, if you're driving, we have amazing agriculture here and we have beautiful land, but there's a lot of pockets where there's very sparse populations. So you don't have grocery stores there. You don't have health care there. It's really hard to find childcare. You know, if you don't have a car, you can't go anywhere. And right. so all of those root cause issues compound, and that is what drives our food insecurity rate. Here in the state, I think it's about 1 in 8 right now. The status just came out is food insecure. And then the child food insecurity rate is actually higher than that, which is something that we are strategically addressing. We have made a concerted effort in our budget and our funding to address the child feeding population to where we are going to feed 4,000 kids a week through the backpack program this year.
Right.
That is a lot of resources and effort, but those are our most vulnerable population. And we as an organization and board feel that that's where our resources need to be.
I've done the backpack program before, and that's just hard to believe that there's kids that go home Friday knowing that their next meal could possibly not be till Monday.
Yep.
So it's heartbreaking.
It is.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions the public has about hunger or about the people you serve from the food bank?
I love this question. When you say the word hungry or food insecure, a lot of times people immediately picture a homeless person,
right.
honestly. And the reality is the population we serve the most are working families that are at a pay scale that's a poverty level and are seniors because they're on a fixed income. So it's your grandmothers, it's your neighbors, it's your child's friend at school. We do address food insecurity in our unhoused populations and those clients that are struggling for various reasons, but the majority of the populations that we feed are our working poor families and our senior populations.
Wow. Right. You do think of just homeless, yeah. but it's so many more people than
people
that.
Want to make it someone else's fault. And so it's usually, well, they are have an addiction problem or
right.
pick the one thing, but that really is maybe 1% of the population that we feed.
Wow. Thinking back to COVID, I know pretty much everything changed from COVID, but how have inflation, supply chain issues, COVID, all of those things changed the food bank landscape?
That's a great question. COVID really shone a light on food insecurity. It made it, I'll use the word normalized, not normalized in a positive way, but just we talk about it now, and it shone a light on it. That created a lot of supply chain issues for us to source food. It created a great need. There was a lot of people that were not working. And so they didn't, you know, some of our typical funding partners didn't have money to support us, yet the need was high. So it's always this concave experience where typically when the funding sources are low, the need is really high.
Right.
And from that, I think there's been a more empathetic view of food insecurity and hunger, which I'm very, very grateful for. You know, there's good and bad in everything. And that's one of the really positive things that came out of COVID. We're always addressing experiences that we have no control over, like the fall. We had Hurricane Helene that was devastating to the western part of the state in North Carolina. And a lot of our 3 months from October to December was addressing those families that all of their houses and lives were wiped out. So we're always having to watch and then plan and be agile. So when there is that need that arises, we can just really go right to it and address it.
Yeah. Speaking of the hurricane, that was pretty hard to see people in the mountains, you know, struggling from a hurricane. That's just not something we've heard of much before. So I'm glad you guys were there and could be a resource. shifting to kind of your leadership, what are some of the biggest challenges you face as a nonprofit leader in this day and age in 2025?
Right now, everything is too political, and I'm just going to be very transparent about that. When you think of the word nonprofit, people associate it that it's not a business. And a lot of people expect an experience that you wouldn't find walking into a corporate business or a family-run business and how you should run your organization. I don't understand that, because if you look at my W-9, the checkbox is a corporation. So we're right. Actually a corporation. I just don't pay taxes. That's literally the only difference. And so a lot of times politics pick a basic human need to use it as fodder, and I'm going to say it like that, and it polarizes it, and it doesn't allow the humanity to come through. And that's what a lot of things we're dealing with right now is just food and hunger shouldn't be political. It just needs to be taken off the table. So we're working through that, because if you think through the changes in leadership that we have, and it does change every 4 years, and we get a new set of rules or a new set of pluses and minuses. And so we just need to be cognizant as a community and a neighbor and family that people are at the center of this and that we don't need to make some things political.
Well said. How do you build trust with your donors, staff, volunteers, and the people you serve?
I love that question. So when you think about trust, it's a relationship. And we just had a team meeting actually Tuesday, and the whole purpose of it is we are a customer-centric business. And we talk through what does that mean? And what is the experience? What does trust and loyalty mean? Why do we have repeat customers? Why do people want to interact with Harvest Hope? And that's really what it is. We are a customer-centric business. So we focus on urgency, proactiveness, transparency. We invite all of our donors to come and do tours with us so they can really see their money at work, because I do think that is eye-opening. I think a lot of times, sometimes nonprofits, it's really hard, so you can't go look and see what they do. And we have a doors wide open policy. We love you to come in and we'll walk through our warehouses and you get to see how we make our packages and we ship our food. So I do believe that shows trust. I think the longevity of Harvest Hope and the resources that we put into the community build trust, because we have a history of that. And when you hear the testimonials from the people that we serve, whether it's a client or an agency, I think that builds trust in the community, because it's not our voice touting what we do. Because I don't think that, I mean, that's really easy to say. I can sit here and talk about Harvest Hope all day long. But when you hear the testimonials of other people and the lives they touch, I do think that's a fundamental element of trust as well.
Right. The few times I've come in to volunteer, we've always been offered a tour, and it's, you know, there's always new employees with us that haven't been there. And it's really nice to see. Kind of one thing that sticks out in my mind is when they're showing us around, there's a section where, I'm not sure what they called it, maybe special occasions, but there's like birthday cakes, there's diapers and formula. And like that just really made me think, like, people are coming to get their food, but that might be someone's birthday. Like that might be grandma's birthday that they couldn't otherwise get a cake. So that was so heartwarming to see that.
I love that. That part of that is asking kind of where you are when we talk with our clients. And I, if you think through a mom and a child's birthday, it's so, I've seen the smiles of the kids walking out with the cakes, because I don't think they were going to get one if they hadn't come in that day. And that is just, it makes you smile. That's why we do it.
It does. Yeah. And I know it hasn't happened yet, but I think you still have a vision for somewhat of a grocery store environment where the kids can come in with the mom and maybe help pick out food that they're looking to get?
Yeah, so we really are always looking to create a dignified experience for anybody that interacts with Harvest Hope, whether it's our donors, our volunteers, or our clients. And if you think through food and a grocery store experience, a lot of times people, they have their own personal favorites. They have food allergies. They have favorite family recipes, And we want to create an environment that when a mom is bringing her child to Harvest Hope, they get to pick out the foods that their family wants to eat. And so we are looking to transition our emergency food pantries into more of a market type environment where our neighbors choose their own food. Right now, our volunteers help pick that for them, but that is the transition we're looking to go to.
Right. I can just imagine the smile on kids' faces when they get to decide, you know, what snacks or, you know, what they get to put for their lunchbox.
And the reality is we don't need those children to know they're at a food bank.
No.
They don't have to.
Right. Can you talk a little bit about the role of partnerships? You've mentioned several, you know, donors, government, businesses that are involved. How do those partnerships play a role in what you guys do there?
It's actually how we do what we do. We cannot do what we do without partners. And we have multiple different types of partners, like you mentioned, volunteers, donors, our agency partners, our clients are our partners. My staff is my partners. So nobody is born in a vacuum. No company exists in a vacuum. And we have to make sure every day that our organizational culture is focused on building great relationships with our partners. And it is a relationship, and it does need to be a positive relationship where every person involved knows anyone who interacts with Harvest Hope is going to make a difference and give hope to somebody. And that's really what we focus on daily.
I love that. And it really gives meaning to, you know, a lot of corporations or employees of those corporations where they can see maybe if they're in a grocery store, like food that they can't sell anymore, but is still good food,
yep,
can still go and help people. So I think that's rewarding on so many levels. Thinking of like storytelling, I'm sure you have so many that come to mind, but is there a story of a family or an individual that you guys helped at Harvest Hope that really just stuck with you?
There's so many. I'll just say the latest experience that I have, and this really shone a light on everything that we do. So we were in a meeting in my office, and I have a window so I can see, you know, people walking by, and I started seeing people running by. I was like, oh Lord, what's going on? So I walk out there, and an elderly gentleman had fallen and hit in his head and was really needing medical attention. There was a lady there that was giving him kind of first aid, and she had his head in her lap. And then there was another lady calming him down. And what that was, it was a veteran that had just left the VA. He was struggling with low blood sugar and medical issues and didn't have any food. So he left the VA hospital he just got checked out, came here, and from walking into the building had tripped and fallen. The lady that was helping him was actually visiting our food pantry too. So she was in line, saw him fall. She was an EMS worker, had been working for 20 years as an EMS worker, which is why she was able to help administer that really quick first aid, check vital signs. And then the other lady helping was our volunteer. And that really was the most beautiful experience because it goes back to who uses our services. It's everybody. It's people that truly need it, but it's still, there's still caring and empathy in humans that love each other. And that every time I see any kind of experience like that, that people genuinely are putting others first, that's what does it for me.
Oh, that's a great story. And I think that plays into this next question. How do you measure success beyond just the meals you've served?
That is a great question. I think ultimate success would be I'm not here anymore.
Yeah, that yes, you can close your doors because yes, there's exactly, no more hunger.
It's hard because a lot of people want to hear about the pounds. They want to hear about the meals we feed. And so it creates this almost negative energy that if we're not hitting a number or a level, then we don't need help or the need's not there. I do think success for me can be broken down into smaller areas. Success for me is my staff that come to work every day and want to. Success for me is our volunteers that come through Harvest Hope, but then go tell somebody else to volunteer or donate. Success to me is when that moment, that family is right there, we actually can help them in that one real-time moment because we've created an infrastructure organization that's sustainable and can be there to help them. So for me, success right now is how we interact with people that interact with Harvest Hope. And once again, every person that interacts with us leaves better.
That's great. What have you learned about yourself through this work, through being in a nonprofit, you know, out of the corporate world that you were in, you know, in banking? So what have you learned about yourself through all of this?
I've definitely learned what I don't know pretty quickly.
Right.
It is, and that's a good thing. I think that's, you need to learn that. I've learned that you can make a difference even when it feels insurmountable. And I've also learned just through my role in this experience as a leader of Harvest Hope, just how to be a better leader. I'm nowhere in any shape or form done learning how to do that, but I do feel like I've learned how to connect with people better, how to be there and show up for people better.
That's great. And I'm so proud of you. Just the years I've known you, probably what, 10 years or so, but I'm so proud of you. Like, I'm envious that you're doing this daily. Like, I have a heart for giving back too. So I'm in awe that that's what you get to do every day.
I appreciate that, Paula.
You're making a huge difference. So it's not always easy though. So how do you stay motivated when times get tough?
I have to refocus on the people that need me. It is hard. You know, it is hard work. My staff shows up every day and it is not easy work by any means at all. It's very easy to get caught up in all the white noise of the minutia of it, in the drama or reactiveness or things you can't control, like the economics or political environment. And it can get very overwhelming because if you think through how many people are relying on Harvest Hope, that's a really overwhelming number. And it can take your breath away sometimes. But what I did early on was I turned my desk so I could face outside and I just see the people walking up that need the food. And it really resets me to where it'll be okay.
You'll find a way.
We'll just make it happen.
So I've brought interns with me when we come out to Harvest Hope. And I always think that's an important part of their internship is to see a volunteer role. What advice would you give to someone considering a leadership role in the nonprofit sector?
When you think of the nonprofit sector, and I'm going to go back to the nonprofit business, I'm going to keep calling it that because it is what it is. And I think people need to shift their mindset for us to have nonprofits that are sustainable. Because if you don't, and we see this a lot, they'll have to close their doors. So if you're an intern, and depending upon where your passion lies, whether it's sales, marketing, warehousing, logistics, there's so many different roles depending upon the nonprofit that you're working for that you can go get your hands dirty, boots on the ground. Every nonprofit needs volunteers. It's a great way to get real-time experience in an industry that is focused on giving back. And I do think that matters. It's a little more rewarding. So nothing against banks, but
right.
You can go learn sales and marketing Harvest Hope, or you can go sell a bank. It's going to be much more rewarding right. at that time in your life to see an actual result of what you're doing that changes somebody's life.
And those are skills that can go into the corporate world, 100%. Just like you went from corporate to nonprofit. So it's important to keep that in mind.
And if you think of all the funding partners, a lot of those are key business leaders in corporations around the state. And I've had a lot of interns. I mean, if you come intern with us and you're looking for a particular field, I have no problem reaching out and say, hey, they did a really good job here. You know, they're looking for a job. So there right. is really a great networking opportunity as well.
Right. I couldn't agree more. So looking into the future, where do you see Harvest Hope in the next 5 years?
That'll be a crystal ball question because I have no idea the political landscape in 5 years.
True.
And it's really, we're waiting for several different layers to flow down from the bill that just passed and see where the actual cuts are. Some might be positive. I don't know. Some might be negative. So it's really hard for me to say that right now because it's just an unknown environment and I truly don't know.
So that's where that adaptability
we're
comes
hanging
in.
Loose and agile right now.
That's
we're
right.
just watching and moving.
That's right. So what does hope mean to you today and how do you see it showing up in your work?
Hope to me is the concept or thought that you're not done, whatever that means. It's not done. There's another chance. There's another day. Hope is tomorrow. If you lose the thought that there's something else, that's when you don't have hope anymore. What was the second part of that question?
Oh, how do you see hope showing up in your work every day?
I think it shows up for me that when people come, a lot of them are their hope's almost gone. That little light's almost
right.
out. It's they don't come, and I talk to people about this a lot because a lot of times when people think of food insecurity, there is a lot of blame. There's a lot of misconceptions of who's using our services. And I watch these people come in, and sometimes they come in, sometimes people dress up. They are at the last point of their life. Because if you think you can't feed yourself or your family, you've tried literally everything else before you come to my door. And I watch their faces and their body language. Couples come in and hold hands. A lot of people do dress up, honestly, that you can tell they have. Some people just are not walking in with their head up because they just have the weight of shame and burden and guilt and everything else going into that door. But I do watch them walk out, and most of them are in a completely different posture. They're smiling. They just have that one more chance. And I think that's how we give hope.
That's that bag of food or that box of food is, you know, giving them the fuel to make things better. Yeah. Incredible. How can people support you guys at Harvest Hope, whether they're local or just hearing about you and they're in another state?
We definitely need support in any way people can give back, and always encourage. Nothing is too small. Sometimes we have great funding partners that can write a big check, and we definitely need those. But sometimes people see that in their they're thinking, well, my can won't help anything. I promise you that if you give us food, unless it's like pie filling from 1925 that we can't take, so just go ahead and throw that away. But if you give us food, somebody's going to eat it. It will definitely make a difference. If you give me a dollar, somebody will eat because you gave me a dollar. So we need volunteers. We need financial support. We need advocacy. We need a voice. And so those are all different ways you can partner with us at Harvest Hope.
That's wonderful. Well, Erin, thank you so much for sharing just a little bit about what you guys do at Harvest Hope.
Thank you for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Yes. Thank you.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.